Welcome to the 21st. I'm Gwen Macsai. Coming up later this hour, there's a new FICO score coming. We'll find out how that's going to impact you and if it even matters. But first, over the past 4 years, thousands of farmers across the Midwest have filed complaints to state agencies about damage to their crops. In many of these cases, it's suspected that the controversial herbicide dicamba may be to blame. Farmers can spray special versions of dicamba right on top of growing soybean plants, and as long as the seeds have been genetically engineered to tolerate it, the plants are fine and weed-free. In fact, the majority of soybean plants planted in America this year were dicamba tolerant. But the problem with dicamba is that it doesn't always stay where it's sprayed. On hot days, it can evaporate and drift, damaging other farmers' plants. Now a peach farmer in Missouri is taking on German agribusiness giants Bayer, which bought Monsanto in 2018, and BASF in a civil lawsuit having to do with the herbicide. For more on this, we're joined on the line now by Aaron Hager. He's an associate professor of weed science in the College of Agriculture, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at U of I. Also on the line with us is Will Glazek. He farms about 1,000 acres of organic corn and soy in Paxton. That's about 30 minutes north of Champaign-Urbana. Both of you, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks for having us.
Professor Hager, I know the EPA originally approved the use of dicamba in late 2016. Can you just start by explaining sort of the basics of what it is and what it's designed to do?
Dicamba is actually a herbicide that's been used commercially in Illinois since the late 1960s, but predominantly its use has always been in corn to control broadleaf weed species. Soybean, on the other hand, is actually one of the most sensitive species to dicamba, and so it took the discovery of a soil bacterium that was able to rapidly degrade dicamba in soils before scientists identified a gene that could be inserted into soybean that made them also resistant to dicamba. And your reference to 2016 would be with respect to when the EPA first approved three commercial dicamba-containing products for use specifically in the dicamba-resistant soybean system.
And how does it affect plants and crops that haven't been genetically modified to withstand it? What do they look like after they've been exposed?
The way dicamba works, it actually works by interfering with some of the hormonal control of plant growth and development. We historically have use the term, it makes the plants grow themselves to death. Essentially, the growth and development that is generally under very strict and tight hormonal regulation in the plant by the endogenous hormones that the plant actually produces is now thrown basically into chaos because now we're introducing a synthetic hormone into the plant. And so essentially there's a lot of different types of symptoms that you can see on sensitive broadleaf species, and the type of symptoms or the severity of the injury that you see is very much dependent upon both the plant species as well as the dose of the exposure.
It sounds almost like a cancer, the way you say it's growing itself to death.
Well, that's just the way that it actually works. We actually now know, I think, very specifically the exact target sites within the plant, but it's a very complicated process to try to delve into here in a relatively short conversation.
Right, right. And just to recap, the soybean has been genetically modified to withstand dicamba.
That's correct.
Okay. And in Illinois, the number of complaints recorded by state agencies rose from about 120 in the pre-dicamba era to more than 700 in 2019. And as we mentioned, the chemical evaporates and blows onto other farmers' crops. But is it ever really possible to prove where neighboring crop damage came from?
Well, what you speak about is actually a process known as volatility. And volatility is the change of a liquid to a gaseous phase. And once that gas then is created from the liquid phase, it essentially moves on the air current. So identifying a specific source of exposure via volatility has been and always will be very, very difficult. But there are other routes of exposure, and those would be actually physical drift that occurs during the application of the dicamba itself outside of the intended target zone. And the third common way is that you actually have residues that remain on application equipment that then are used to apply a different herbicide on a sensitive soybean. So there's actually several routes of exposure of dicamba onto sensitive species.
Now, Will, we want to bring you in here. You farm about 1,000 acres of organic corn and soy in Paxton. When did you start to notice the effects of dicamba on your soybeans?
So all of our soybeans, since they're organic, they're all non-GMO, and which would make them sensitive to dicamba. We started seeing most of the symptoms after the herbicide was approved for the dicamba tolerant soybeans. We typically work with our neighbors, and they've sprayed dicamba on corn for a long time, but we try to plant our soybeans late enough in the year that it doesn't interfere, or they're not up or susceptible when our neighbors are spraying corn.
Mm-hmm. And what was happening to the soybeans?
They get a really cupped leaf, and then their upright growth and bushiness pattern slows down, which can be a real problem for organic farmers when we rely on the competitiveness of a crop against weeds to control weeds.
And how much damage would you say there's been to your yield from dicamba?
On the fields that are hurt really bad, where we see a direct drift issue rather than volatility, we've seen upwards of 90%. And that's kind of a compounded factor where the plant is stunted in growth, and then foxtail would be the primary weed that comes in later in the year. And then the foxtail is able to overtake the soybean and really reduce yields. In a perfectly clean, weed-free environment, I don't know if the dicamba, through a volatility or a lighter dose, if it really hurts yields very much. I think it's extremely dose-dependent.
Mm. That's Will Glazek. He farms organic corn and soy in Paxton. We've also been speaking with Aaron Hager, who's an associate professor of weed science at the University of Illinois. I want to bring another voice into the conversation here. Pam Dempsey is the executive director for the nonprofit newsroom Investigate Midwest. Pam, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
So I want to get to the lawsuit that we mentioned a few minutes ago. Bader Farms, which is the largest peach producer in Missouri, is seeking $20.9 million in damages. What's being alleged in that lawsuit, and what does it have to do with dicamba?
Right. So Bill Bader is alleging through this lawsuit that the company is responsible for the dicamba tolerance system, Monsanto, i.e. Bayer, and BASF, deliberately, quoting from the filing, created an ecological disaster to force higher sales of their products. And as a result of that, his farm has now become unsustainable.
So, yeah, just to tease that out a little bit, they make the dicamba-resistant seeds, and they make the dicamba.
Right, they make the dicamba-resistant seeds, and as Professor A. Hager mentioned, they make a version of dicamba that is touted to be less volatile, touted to drift less. Because of that system overall and because of the timing of the release, EPA approved the sale of the dicamba-resistant soybean and cotton seeds before it approved sale of their version of dicamba. This, according to Bader's lawsuit, alleges that this was intentional on the company's part to force more people to do what they call to force higher sales.
Sure.
So people would buy maybe seeds to prevent damage to their other crops.
And so what's been happening at the trial over the past few weeks? What have we heard from Bader? What's the response from Bayer, Monsanto, BASF been?
Sure. So Bayer and BASF have alleged or have claimed that the damage to the peach farms are not at all from dicamba, that it's other symptoms, a soil fungus, other issues, flooding, that has really damaged his farm. It's nothing to do with dicamba. Bader says, though, that's not true. What he's saying is that his yield has gone down. He testified in the last few weeks that his yield has dropped from 162,000 bushels a year in the early 2000s to as low as 12,000 bushels in 2018, that some of his trees have been killed or weakened by dicamba, and basically this has created a situation. So like when frost hits, it's caused more damage to his peach trees than otherwise would have happened, that his peach trees become more susceptible to other things. Bader presented his case for the last 2 weeks. He wrapped up on Friday, really finished up Monday. Monsanto, Bayer wrapped up their case, started yesterday, wrapped it up today. BASF is now presenting their case. They'll need a couple of days for that.
And but the damage, is it not so distinct that you can attribute damage of the crop to dicamba? You know, Will was saying it has a distinct look.
I mean, it does, but also peaches are a specialty crop, so maybe what looks like dicamba damage on soybeans may not look like that on peach trees. Although my understanding is that what's come out in the trial is that they're seeing sort of similar symptomology. We've had experts, though, for the plaintiff and for the defense, say kind of two different things. One expert is saying, yes, absolutely, I've looked at these fields that have been damaged by dicamba, and he certainly has damage in his peach trees, whereas other experts are like, no way he's had damage from dicamba.
Will, I wonder if I can ask you to speak to some of the tensions between farmers that are seeing the damage from dicamba. Have you run into conflict with your neighbors? I know that there's been quite a bit of conflict, and in fact, I understand there's been one murder even.
Yeah, no murders here in Ford County.
Good to hear.
But we have. All of our neighbors around us are conventional farmers, and the majority of them are using dicamba herbicide on their soybeans. And there have been quite a few tensions where we've been yelled at by our neighbors for not getting on the bandwagon and following what they're doing. They claim us for adding weeds to the seed bank, even when we do have extremely clean fields. Overall, it does tend to hurt relations with our neighbors, which in the past have always been really strong.
And just quickly, do you stand to lose your organic certification because of this?
That's a very wide gray line.
I see.
So every time we have an issue, we make a report. We have to tell our certifier. The certifier will come out and say, yes, this does look like growth regulator symptomology in the soybeans. Let's take a tissue test. So they take a tissue test. And by the time we see symptoms, it could be a couple weeks after the application, the way it works in the plant. And then by the time the certifier gets out, it could be a month or more after an application of drift or volatility. So the actual dicamba residue is gone from the leaf, even though the plant is showing symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Professor Hager, the Environmental Protection Agency extended its approval of dicamba just a year ago before the 2019 growing season. We've been talking about some of the negative consequences of dicamba, but at the end of the day, it is ultimately effective in terms of killing weeds, at least when the seeds are resistant, which was its original purpose. I'm wondering, do you think additional oversight is needed from the EPA about dicamba, or do you think they're doing enough?
It would be hard to actually imagine what else that they could restrict on these application labels of these products. I've never seen product labels written the way these things are. With all the types of reporting requirements and application restrictions, the fact of the matter is they have revised these labels twice already, and the number of complaints and affected acres have only gone up every year. So what else they could do to try to rein this in? The fact of the matter is when you have a product that has volatility, volatility does not obey a label. It never has, and it never will. And you could try to restrict everything. The only thing that you can really actually restrict are around the actual application itself. But again, volatility does not follow a label. It follows the rules of physics and chemistry.
Yeah. Pam, very, very quickly, do you think the ruling, what do you think about the ruling and the lawsuit? You guys are one of the only people covering it.
I think that, you know, it's remains to be seen. We have no guesstimate of how this will turn out. Juries can be finicky. Do I think this will impact the future of dicamba and its availability? No. I mean, there are a few other class action lawsuits around soybeans and other crops. And I think this will maybe determine some of those cases. But as far as its availability, I do not.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Pam Dempsey is the executive director for the nonprofit newsroom Investigate Midwest. I also spoke with Aaron Hager, who's an associate professor of weed science in the College of Agriculture, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences at the U of I, and Will Glazek, who organically farms about 1,000 acres in Paxton, Illinois. Thanks to everybody for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, FICO is changing the way it calculates credit scores. So what does that mean for a state like Illinois with some of the highest rates of credit card debt in the country?
First is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.